Tom Horn is here. An incredible book, Tom. And you say you're going to write 200 more pages to it?
By the end of summer next year. I'm at 3,500 pages of research right now, and somehow I have to try to get this down, you know, to less than 500 pages.
Oh, let's talk about the movie as well. It is very interesting. The movie?
What's that?
Ahriman Gate. You said that there will be a movie from your book, Ahriman Gate.
Yes, that...
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, that deal has already been done. They've said that I can't talk about it yet.
Oh, yes. I see.
I wanted to publish a press release through Reader's News Network, my news service.
And that's a very good service, by the way.
Well, thank you.
And you interviewed some nice people in Roswell, including me.
It was a pleasure to do so. Well, and Vera, too.
Oh, yes. It was a great interview. It was,
by the way, as I understand it right now, the two of you won't be able to be at Burlington, which I'm disappointed. I was hoping to be able to...
But you're going to be speaking at the Vortex Conference.
Right.
And we're doing a show with Mary Sutherland next week as well, going over all of the Vortex Conference. Budget concerns locked us out. I think it's going to be a successful conference, and Farah, next year...
Yes, I guess. It is going to be a very good...
We'll get our fee.
Well, if you get, you know, all you have to do is get to be as cheap as I am, and then it works out.
Well, I mean, it is impossible for me to drive from New Jersey to there. The only way is...
Well, with the airlines the way they are these days, we weren't asking for a lot of money.
Right, I understand.
No, it was just a matter of cost of transportation. Farah, you have some things I know you want to talk to Tom about, so I'll turn it over to you for a minute.
Oh, okay. So, Tom, we can listen to you forever. That's so interesting. That's so amazing. But, of course, I have so many questions. So, first of all, going back to Stargate, you say that Stargate can be a physical or a spiritual dimension. That's interesting, first. And the second thing is that if we go back in time, so what was the first beginning of a Stargate? Was it artificially created, or is it a natural part of the universe?
Well, I think that now, as far as being a natural part of the universe, you know, that's a question, Farah, I've never had asked before. I would assume that maybe that might bridge into the idea of it being metaphysical. In other words, that it is a natural part, but it's a part that we have a difficult time adapting our minds to. You know, one of the things that I found, like with Dr. John Mack, and you know, that when he was still doing his research, he interviewed thousands of abductees.
Yes.
And he talked about how, you know, based on redundant records, how that the people that he was interviewing talked to him about how these alien beings seem to come to us, you know, first of all, from the sky in their strange spacecraft, but how that both they and these spacecraft presented kind of a confusing challenge because they seem to partake of properties that belong to both the spirit and the material world.
Yes.
He said that, I'm trying to remember if it was his book, Abduction, and I believe that was the book, is him, and he talked about how that these beings, on the one hand, they were seen by the abductees, who could feel their bodies being moved, and they would actually have these small lesions that were inflicted upon them. So that this is trace evidence, or physical evidence, if you will. But on the other hand, that these beings seem to be coming. In fact, he actually used the terminology like intermediaries from God or the devil.
How would we know if they are coming from the God or if they are coming from the evil or devil forces? Is it possible to know?
Mac was making the point that there was no way to know. He was simply saying that the phenomenon seemed to match the ancient stories of the succubi and the incubi and sibs and biblical
we
demonology.
Have, Yes, we have the jinns in Turkish and Islamic tradition. We call them jinns.
Jinn, that's right.
Jinn. I mean, in Turkish and Islamic and pre-Islamic, before we became Islam, we were a shamanic society, Turkish society, Turkish race. And before Islam, we believed jinns, that they were interdimensional beings, but they were able to spend some time with us, with humans, in our physical dimension. So they always existed in history, in time, under different names.
Yes, and that under the right circumstances, they have a method by which they can move through their reality and enter into our reality. In fact, Dr. John Mack, I like his term. He actually called it an awkward joining of two species. But Mack, if you read his research, I'm only using him because I could use many others, and I don't want to, you know, just get lost in all this research. He also talked about this in Stargate terminology or portal terminology. He talked about how that many of the abductees had spoke to him of their sense, that at least some of their experiences were not even occurring within the physical space-time dimensions of the universe as we comprehend it, but that these beings were coming through from another dimension, a slit or a crack in some sort of barrier, some gateway, some portal. Somehow they were coming from their reality into our world from beyond the veil. One of the most interesting parts of his research had to do with people who did not have high educations, and some who had no education, meaning that they didn't have the cerebral training to be able to describe quantum physics or things like that, but that some of those same people who had little education to prepare them to talk about these abstractions, these odd dislocations in scientific terms, had actually talked about, had used words that described a collapse, if you will, of space-time that occurred during their experiences, that they were experiencing these aliens, their abductors, as happening in another reality, although one that was just as powerful or real to them as the familiar physical world, but that they used language that to him came across as being identical to what people of very high education explaining quantum physics, portals, pathways, some methodology by which you could move through one reality into another. You also have people like Jacques Vallée, who I very much appreciate his research, and as you know, in my book, quoted him quite often. Talking about how these ultra-terrestrials...
Oh, yes, it's another very important subject, in fact, ultra-terrestrials.
How that they were actually harvesting matter, and then they would manipulate animal, plant, atmospheric, molecular energy...
Energy vampires.
You're kind of like an energy Dracula.
How do we even know where the ancient stories of the vampires came from?
Well, I've always suspected there's more to that than meets
the eye. I think that it is related to extraterrestrials because, yes, they come from...
They can walk up and down walls. I mean, they can do things, and they seem to they come through windows. You notice that? Dracula. He comes through windows. Well, that's exactly what the aliens do, some of them.
Shape-shifting. Dracula shape-shifts.
Shape-shifting.
Yes.
And they have an interest in... Draining blood.
Draining the energy and using hypnosis in order to control the victim, which basically grays through that.
Well, Tom and Farah, are we talking about, for this particular instance, the needing the blood? And Farah knows some of my pet hypothesis about certain ET races, perhaps. Are we talking about they need the blood?
They need the blood, first of all, yes.
Because they need it to exist, or are they using it for
both.
Experiments?
Maybe they need it for their own body system. Maybe human blood is their alimentation. Or maybe they need human and animal blood for their scientific experiments.
Now, Tom, you're the doctor of divinity here. That would make them demons, right? Or is that an objective, subjective term?
Well, it's a subjective term in the sense that all of these researchers I've already referred to, like to being skewed. And I didn't want to do that, so I actually used the best secular researchers, and every one of them, to a person, drew the same conclusion that whatever we were talking about here, at least in some cases, especially as it might relate to the alien grays, that we were talking about a phenomenon that was, if not identical, was at least comparable to historical demonology. That what people down through time had been reporting about these visitors who come in the nighttime, the incubus and succubus and other records. Think about the incubus and succubus. What did they do? They came, they had an interest in actually collecting human sperm. And then they would use this later to impregnate a host, and then they would collect the offspring. I mean, isn't that identical to what?
That's the abduction story of today.
Yes. And we're talking about history that goes back through thousands of years. In different religions, different ideas, people explaining Zeus coming down and he collects matter and he uses it with a woman, and then there is a giant that's born out of his relationship. The same kind of story is told in the Sumerian text, the Anunnaki, you know, the Zachariah Sitchin's whole record of the Anunnaki who came down. They blended themselves with humans, and they used some of them as slaves. Some of them were evil, some of them were good. This is a story that goes back to the beginning of time, and it's occurring as we speak right now. So, you know, Farah's original question had to do with it being, what is it, metaphysical, or is it an advanced form of science? Well, we also have the CERN Stargate that's opened this week. Thankfully, so far, it hasn't destroyed the world. But this CERN Stargate is all about trying to find the Higgs boson, the God particle, the mystery of what holds all matter together. And they're also hoping that they're going to find proof of other dimensions.
The interesting thing is that this project, CERN project, is going to be completed in the next 4 years. So it is going to be completed in 2012. Again, what is the secret of the 2012?
Isn't that interesting?
Let's follow that up, but I've got to take a break. 2012 coming up next, folks.
From the entertainment capital of the world, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Jerry Pippen with entertainment news, views, and interviews.
It's a great new season. Join us on VegasRadioShow.com as we bring the sizzle and the excitement of the world's most exciting city, Las Vegas. Vera Udoza, you brought up 2012.
Yes, again, 2012, CERN project is going to be completed in the next 4 years. And
well, Tom, what do you think?
Well, do we want to talk about the year 2012, or do we want to talk about the CERN project, because I know we don't have very much time?
I want to talk about it, but I want to both.
Yeah.
Both.
Well, you're probably going to have to, look, you know, first of all, this CERN project, you know, I did a 3-hour radio show with somebody else this last week, and they were, and before CERN was ever turned on, they asked me if I thought it was going to suck us into a black hole, or these super strangelets were going to be released and consume us all, and I said no. It wasn't my belief that it would, but that this science is extraordinary, and could actually just shatter our existing theories about physics. First of all, they're hoping, and there's a debate about whether they will, but they're hoping to find new particles, such as the theoretical Higgs bosons, you know, the God particle, mm-hmm. Which is theorized to give mass to everything. But to me, what was more interesting was what we were talking about at the break, is that this CERN collider also pretends to prove the existence of unknown dimensions. And in doing so, these physicists are telling us that if they do, then it's going to kind of be like what Einstein did to physics in his day. I mean, it's going to alter our understanding of the universe as we know it. It could actually be the first baby step toward the discovery of the kind of dimensional reality that until now has only been speculated about in different theories and fictionalized in sci-fi movies like Star Trek, which you mentioned at the beginning of this show. That's, of course, if it doesn't destroy us all when it comes to full power. The other thing that I think, though, that is interesting...
You think, before you go any further, if it did destroy us all, would it be a chain reaction or instant?
Well, I think it, yeah. I mean, if it was going to happen, I don't think any of us have anything to worry about anyway, because it's going to be over so quick that we're not even going to know it happened. I don't believe that's going to happen, by the way. But I'm still interested in the project because, you know, like if you read my book, The Ahriman Gate or even Nephilim Stargates, I talk about M-brains. And these are all based on real quantum physics, the idea that the third dimension, which we understand, isn't even the beginning. That there are, as far as quantum physicists know, and this based on, some of it based on tested theory, there are at least 10 dimensions, and maybe many more than that. And what CERN could potentially do is start introducing us to some of these other dimensions. Now, the other thing, though, that's interesting about CERN is this large statue of the Indian deity, Shiva Nataraja, which I think Farah mentioned earlier, which symbolizes the dance of creation and destruction.
Yes.
And of course, you know, there are those out there who were trying to stop the startup of the super collider. I mean, they saw the Shiva about to do the destruction side of his dance and were very concerned about it because you got protons now that are going to be, they haven't done this part yet, but these things are going to be slammed together at a peak energy of 14 trillion electron volts all at one time. And this is, by the way, going to create black holes. They think that, you know, they'll diminish quickly. It could create these super atoms, the strangeness I referred to earlier. And that was part of these lawsuits where they believe that this thing could destroy the world. But while I didn't believe any of that was going to happen, I still don't, the dedication to Shiva does show that there could be a spiritual side too, or a metaphysical, if you want to reuse that term, to what's going on there at CERN. You know, there are some people that, I don't know if you saw this, there were some who were questioning the design of the official logo of CERN, which they thought showed the beastly number 666. Did you see any of others
sure.
who were connecting it to CERN Nunos, you know, the horn deity of the ancient Celts and Gauls. Which, by the way, later on became Pan, which is interesting if you think of Pan dimensional. But they were connecting it to Pandemonium, which in mythology was to unleash a frenzy of demons. One of the more interesting things about this, the abbreviation for the Hadron Collider, which is HC, which in Hebrew means a gate or a gateway. But even if none of that means anything, this dance of Shiva Nataraja that destroys at the atomic level and then rebuilds from the atomic level upwards, this is intriguing, isn't it, Farah?
It's extremely, yes.
And you have this metaphor that is encoded at CERN through this statue, because I'm sure that most of your audience understands that all of creation, including intelligent living species, obviously humans, whose bodies are temples of their souls and spirits, all of this is made up of these same atomic particles that they're experimenting with there, protons, neutrons surrounded by spinning electrons that form different molecules of different density, so that molecules which make up our body are different than the densities that make up a tree. And we're talking about something here now, an invention, a stargate, if you will, that could take us to a deeper understanding of how atomic energy occurs than what we've ever understood before. It might bring us to a new understanding of who we are as a species. It might also have something to do with realigning what we are as a
species. Well, and you talk about that, and we're not that far from 2012, so that's the reason I said we need to discuss both of them. You think the Mayan calendar has anything to do with anything?
Yeah, I do.
What?
I wrote an article. When is this show going to broadcast?
This coming week.
Okay, well, that'll be fine then. I wrote an article just for WorldNet Daily today that'll be published by them as an exclusive on Monday.
Well, this show will be coming out Monday evening or Tuesday.
Well, good then, because I have to make sure that when I do anything.
Right. No, it won't come up before.
These gods of Middle America, the Aztecs, the Mayan deities, such as Quetzalcoatl, and whether the end of their long calendar and the return of their chief god Quetzalcoatl, according to the mythology in 2012, corresponds with ancient Eastern biblical prophecies, other prophecies around the world, or belief systems around the world, for that matter, even the return of the Watchers, the giants, you know, my title, the year 2012 and the return of the Watchers. The thing about all of that is that you have these very intriguing pieces of symbolism, Jerry. Among the legends of these multidimensional beings in Mayan belief, there was this methodology that existed whereby they believed that in some cases, Quetzalcoatl, their other gods, could move from behind or through gateways. Now, sometimes this meant through statues, through persons, but sometimes it meant descending down out of the heavens or out of the Ouroboros. And this is chiseled in their stone. It also included them coming down in winged discs, if you will, among these sky locations into Earth's reality. So what's interesting about the year 2012 is, I'm trying to think how to say all this in like the next 5 minutes. You have the ecliptic, the pathway of the sun, which crosses the Milky Way. And their ancient descriptions depict the distance between those points as a snake called the Ouroboros, or the tail devourer. Now, it wasn't just the Mayans that showed that. That was in Aztec, Chinese, Native American mythologies. The symbolism about the mouth of a snake swallowing its own tail. And many people believe that this is very symbolic of the idea of a stargate. In Mayan mythology, sometimes Quetzalcoatl is actually viewed as being the Ouroboros in Aztec and Toltec ruins, but sometimes he's being viewed as coming out of the Ouroboros, which is prophesied to happen in the year 2012. Now, some of their renderings show a ladder descending down out of the ecliptic, and so he descends down, you know, out of the mouth of the Ouroboros on a ladder. But this is prophesied to happen in the year 2012, the end of time, the reopening, if you will, of this serpent portal, the end of the great cycle of the Mayan calendar and the planetary cycle of the Aztec calendar, December 21, the year 2012. There's a lot of other prophecies that say that the Earth is going to come to an end and all that, but the Maya don't believe that. They describe these past visits of Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, and they believe when he comes back this time, it's actually just going to signal the beginning of a new era. Is that correct, Farah?
Yes. In fact, if we had time, I was going to ask you a couple of questions about...
Go ahead. We can go a couple of minutes over because we're editing this.
Air snake, the snake which comes from the air, the snake which has the ability of flying. So all this information repeats itself, but it, at the same time, it explains, one step explains the other step. So talking about, for instance, again, your book, Stargate, there are some passages about my country, Turkey, Pergamum, and the power of the snake symbolism in Pergamum in Asclepius. Isn't it interesting?
Yes. Well, there again, you know, the repetition between this idea about serpent technology or the serpent god turns up over and over again throughout various different mythology. And it's very easy to relate this symbolism to the idea that it was encodified in the astrological symbols, in the stars or in the sky, and the fact that you had different religions at different times who encodified it in the same way makes you wonder then, you know, what the Mayans may have known about their their version of the Ouroboros and their depictions of this serpent, circular serpent, star system that was going to come to an end in the year 2012, that the serpent rope is going to emerge again from the center of the Milky Way, and that Quetzalcoatl is going to return to mark the end of our age and the beginning of another age. The part of the book that you're talking about, my book, Nephilim Stargates, the sixth chapter...
Yeah, that chapter was actually written by David Flynn, right? Farah knows him. Wrote something about the occult in Roswell, didn't he, Farah?
I know very well that article. I read it. I know.
And it was the most extraordinary article. I mean, and he talked about how the year 2012, even the landing site at Roswell, even the Mount of Horeb upon which these watchers, these gods we started talking about at the beginning of the show, came down, and even the year 1776, the founding of this country.
Yeah, he ties all that together for 2012.
You know that 33.33 is a very important number. Those same degrees of the great circle of the earth are exactly 2,012 nautical miles. And David showed how that Mount Hermon in Phoenicia, the location of the extraterrestrial influence that first came down, the watchers, if you will, who came down the first time with man, it lies at precisely 33.33 degrees north, 33.33 degrees east, exactly 2,012 miles from the equator and 2,012 miles from the prime meridian. It's the most extraordinary research, and the only other place on Earth where these numbers all match in the same way is the exact location of the crash site of the UFO in Roswell, New Mexico. The point was about all of it that perhaps those who came down the first time were leaving us some kind of a marker on Earth so that we would know when they were going to come back the second time.
Tom and Farah, we're out of time almost completely. Clock has got us. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been the Parazone Hour. Good night. Thank you.